Hello and welcome. Today I'm talking with Dr. Eric Enlich from Top College Consultings. We are talking about college capable and college readiness for neurodivergent students. It was really interesting conversation. We're talking about the difference between college capable, meaning being academically prepared, and college readiness, meaning having the awareness, advocacy, and self-management to be independent in the world and at school. So if you have a neurodivergent student or any student that is looking to start their college search and college journey, you want to join our conversation today. Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. If you are a new parent to special education or a seasoned parent sitting at the IEP table, welcome and thanks for joining us. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am a mom and special educator. I have sat on both sides of the IEP table as a parent and a professional. Over the last 25 plus years, I have made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build killer kick butt IEPs and support plans. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. And if you are new to our podcast, give us a like and a follow. If you have a friend that would be interested in this episode, please share it. It would mean the world to me. So let's get ready to strategize special education style. Welcome to the show, and I'm excited to talk about college readiness and preparing to apply for neurodivergent students. And our guest today is in the trenches working with families from Top College Consultants. And I'm going to have Eric introduce himself and give a little bit of background on how you came to be. So welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Wendy. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, so I'm Eric Enlich. I'm a clinical psychologist and educational consultant. And before doing this work with college admissions, I worked for many years in mental health with teens and adults. And I've always loved working with teens. So it was a very natural transition to kind of switch over to the college counseling role, so to speak. I found that there are actually quite a bit of counseling skills involved. And it's just fascinating. And I love helping kids who would otherwise encounter challenges in the process.
Perfect. So you self-identify as neurodivergent. Are you comfortable about sharing a little bit about your journey and how it aligns with supporting the students that you work with today?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's something I didn't really figure out until later in life, which is true for a lot of people my age, because it just, there wasn't a lot of diagnosis going on when we were kids. You know, twice exceptional, I guess, is another label that works. I was identified as gifted as a kid. And, you know, I always felt kind of different. And I had a great group of friends and so on. But as an adult, raising my own kids who are neurodivergent, who are now adults, I was in the autism world. So I had a lot of exposure also as a psychologist. And then kind of realized at one point that I'm on the spectrum too. And my wife and I actually realized it at the same time. And then that just kind of redoubled my efforts to working with neurodivergent clients, first as a psychologist and later as an educational consultant.
That's a perfect transition, and to support students and really have that strong background and compassion and empathy with families and with students themselves to help guide them. How can students start working on a plan to be ready for college, since transition to college is such a big time in a student's and a family's life?
Yeah, that's certainly an important thing to look at. And I, you know, one piece of it, of course, is starting early. If you're not really thinking about this much until late in junior year or senior year, there isn't a lot of time to prepare. You just kind of dive in and apply. But ideally, families start thinking about this earlier. And if they're going to work with a consultant, you know, approach us earlier so that they can work on college readiness, which is super important, you know, being fully ready for college, not just getting in, but being ready to thrive and succeed in college, and thinking about what kind of environment they need. You know, are they going to be looking for a four-year college living away from home? Are they better off with a community college? What do they want to study? Some of the same kinds of questions that all families are thinking about, you know, how far to be away from home can they be, and so on. But there are other pieces too, like what kind of support they will need, what kind of accommodations they will need, and do they have the documentation to obtain that in college? So one piece of it might be, you know, getting appropriate documentation to get accommodations in college. Some of it may be talking with the staff at the high school if they're on a special education program to be kind of positioning themselves as well as possible for college.
What does college readiness look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, so, you know, being able to handle the academics of college, I think of that as being college capable. So if a student, for example, is doing really well in high school, taking challenging courses, honors courses, AP courses, dual enrollment, where they're taking community college courses, and they're getting good grades, there's every reason to think that they'll be ready for the academics of college. And I think of that as being college capable. College ready is, are they ready for the independence? Are they ready to live away from home, manage their time, make their own decisions, get along with a roommate, self-advocate with professors, and on and on and on. It's a long list. And I break it down into sort of three areas. One is self-awareness. Do they know what their strengths are and what their challenges are? And then the second is self-advocacy. Can, when they encounter challenges, whether it's social, emotional, academic, can they step up and ask for help and pursue whatever resources they need? And the third is self-management. Can they manage their time, manage their emotional reactions, manage money, manage their impulses? So those are some three big areas.
Those are huge areas. And I have three boys myself. One is a senior. So we're starting that, or we're in the throes of it, I should say. We're not starting it. We're in the throes of that. But I like how you separated the college prepared with the college readiness, because I see a lot of students, that really was a light bulb moment for me in terms of that discerning the two, that students are, could be very prepared academically to go to college. But where they start to struggle is that awareness, advocacy, and self-management, that readiness part.
Yeah. And so many families are focused on the first part. You know, are they taking enough AP courses? Are their grades going to be good enough to get in college? There's so much emphasis on that in our society and in many communities where there's a high percentage of kids going to college, that it's easy to sort of overlook the other piece. You know, do you know how to manage money? Do you know how to take public transportation? Do you know how to do your own laundry?
Yeah. And I think sometimes families are overwhelmed with life and just family and work and all of that stuff that we don't often, and I think that's the value of our conversation today, is I really start to think about that self-management, that readiness component. So at what age, I mean, really you could start this at an early age, and definitely not a senior in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if your kid is willing to start learning how to cook at a young age, then absolutely bring them into the kitchen and teach them how to cook at just about any age. You know, other things like managing money or managing a savings account or a credit card, obviously that would be significantly later, but definitely, you know, early on in high school, we like to see families helping kids move gradually into that self-advocacy part. Typically, you know, I'm a special needs parent myself. I know that it's natural and normal to be kind of at the forefront advocating for your child, but there should be this shift over the course of high school where the child starts to move into the driver's seat and they go to the IEP meetings if they're on an individualized education plan, for example, and start to think about, you know, helping formulate the goals and so on.
I've heard this, and I've said this before, you know, in terms of parenting, you're a manager and then you go into that consultant role. And that seems what you're doing here as your student is in high school, really trying to hand off the baton with these skills. Do you see starting with one skill over the other work better? Or what are some unique barriers that you have seen in helping families and students transition or develop that college readiness?
Yeah, well, I think you can work on multiple skills simultaneously, maybe not all in the same day, but, you know, concurrently. And that's one of the ways I think working with consultants like us can be helpful, is that students are starting to get into that mindset of, I need to be working directly with professional adults other than my parents, that my parents are not necessarily on the front lines, but I'm directly speaking up for myself with adults, because they're going to have to do that in college, whether it's with their professors, a career counselor, disability services staff. So they need to get used to directly communicating with and self-advocating with professionals. So we are, you know, one step in that process. As far as barriers, you know, I think a big barrier is emotional. It's anxiety, whether it's the parent being afraid that, oh, my kid's never done this for themselves. They've never lived away from home. You know, I've always made their doctor's appointments for them. You know, the parents can be very anxious about change. I don't know if my kid is going to crash and burn if I just step back and let them, you know, do some of these things. But high school is a good time for them to start trying and occasionally failing. I don't mean failing courses, but you know, failing at new things that they try, so that they can, you know, dust themselves up and dust themselves off and try again. And of course, kids will have the same anxiety too, that, you know, what if I can't do it? You know, I've never done this before. I've never made my own dentist appointment before, or, you know, cooked a meal before. So that's normal, you know, when you're venturing into new territory, and it's okay to be anxious, but that shouldn't stop you from pushing on.
Do you role play with the students in terms of like making an appointment, in terms of speaking on the phone is very different than texting. And so, you know, in terms of answering the phone, how to make the appointment, where to schedule it, how to put it in like your personal phone for scheduling. What is your suggestions for parents, or do you role play or anything like that with the
students? Yeah, I mean, we help with any part of the process. We communicate with parents too. So parents, you know, if the parents are like, well, you know, how can I do this? We might kind of guide them through ways that they could make some of these changes happen. And, you know, one of the kinds of role plays that we'll do would be a mock interview. If a student, for example, is going to have an admissions interview, or, you know, last week I was helping a student practice for an interview for a summer job. So that's one way that we can kind of role play is, you know, I'm going to pretend to be the admissions officer and ask you about why you're applying to this college. And again, those are good opportunities for students to get used to stepping forward and being on the front line dealing with adult professionals.
A recent blog you had on your website is all about the 7 things students with disabilities should do when starting college. Can you highlight a few of these things?
Sure. I mean, we've touched on some of it already. I mean, we've talked about getting an early start, but in the article, I talk about getting an early start planning your accommodations and services. So, you know, for example, if you have accommodations, disability accommodations in high school, such as extra time on tests would be a very common one, and you're thinking that those are helpful in high school, they're going to be, you know, they may be necessary or helpful in college too. So starting to think about, well, how do I get those accommodations? Do I have the documentation I need? Do I need to be talking to disability services offices at colleges to understand how the process works? And not just accommodations, but support services. If there's a learning support program or an autism support program, what is the application process? When do I apply? What do I need in order to apply? So learning all that stuff early so that you're not, you know, kind of freaking out in senior year that you don't have the documentation you need or the education you need about this stuff. And of course, we help with all of that. We talked about self-advocacy. So, you know, I won't say more about it at the moment. Also, thinking beyond disability services is another point that I make in the article, which is that, sure, disability services plays a key role for a lot of our students, helping them get their accommodations and possibly having a learning support program. But there's a lot of resources available at every college that our students can benefit from using, whether that's career services, mental health counseling, meeting with your academic advisor, going to your professor during office hours, going to the tutoring center. There's so many resources available to all students, and we'd hate for our students to kind of overlook the all the richness of benefits they can get from those services. And often, again, in college, starting early on. Don't wait till senior year of college to go to the career center to realize, you know, oh, I better start looking for a job. Go in freshman year so they can help you find summer jobs and internships and work on your resume and help you learn interviewing skills.
That's fantastic. You've mentioned a couple times about disability services and planning accommodations, supports, and documents. For parents that are listening, they perhaps have school-age children, and they're thinking of IDEA, our federal law. How can you explain to parents and folks that are listening how IDEA really changes that support, how that shifts in terms of law and protection and needs when a student leaves a high school setting to post-secondary?
Sure. It's a pretty major change, and it is worth parents kind of taking the time to understand this. You don't have to get a law degree to understand it. There's not a huge amount to know, but it is really important. And that shift is that the law that students are covered by in college is the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And it's a different kind of mindset. So in high school and before high school, the burden of schools on the school district is for students to succeed. It's for students to be successful and to progress successfully in their education. In adulthood and in college and in the workplace, and it's the same law that applies to the workplace, the standard isn't success, it's access. So it's just, here's what we are providing to help you access the curriculum. Maybe sitting in front of the class, or, you know, bringing a laptop to class, or getting the professor's notes, or getting a recording of the lecture to access the curriculum, or, you know, physically being able to access the building if you have a mobility issue. But whether you succeed or not, that's kind of on the student. And so all those additional things that you might need to succeed, like coaching and tutoring and so on, that's kind of up to the student to pursue. It's not the college's obligation to make sure that the student gets all that stuff. But colleges and workplaces can't discriminate against you if you have a disability. So you are protected in that respect.
When we're talking about that college readiness, how does a family that has a student with disability or learning difference, how would they go about selecting a college? I mean, there's so many choices out there. Kind of putting the academic part aside, how do we as parents select a school with our kids to ensure that they are going to be successful and that we can bridge that gap with the college readiness skills and the advocacy and the support?
Yeah, well, the college search process in some ways is similar to what it is for parents of neurotypical children, for all families, in that there's a lot of factors to look at. So location, for example, you know, what part of the country or how far from home can the student travel to go to college? And I find with the families that we work with, students with learning differences, it's common for parents to feel that their kids should be relatively close to home, within a few hours drive, so that they can come home on the weekends. Many of these kids also have mental health challenges. So parents worry, well, if my student gets depressed, or, you know, if they're getting overly anxious, they can come home and we can, you know, they have a sort of a safe place. And if they're too far from home, we can't really help them. So location it's an issue for all families, but it tends to be heightened. Cost, of course, what kind of culture is on campus, you know, student is politically conservative or liberal, is that a concern for them? How big of a college? So there's many different things that go into the search for all families. But the ones that are sort of unique for our families particularly are the supports available there. So if your student, for example, has difficulty with executive functions, with organization, time management, which most of our students do have that challenge, then, you know, will they be looking for a college that has academic coaching, which is similar to executive function coaching, in order to help them, you know, make sure they get their assignments done on time? So there's kind of additional services that our families are looking for, and we help them find those colleges.
Are there specific questions that a parent should ask before applying to a school?
Yes.
Or and a student, for that matter.
In terms of disability accommodations and support services for students with learning differences, you want to do that research during the college search process. So when I tell people to contact disability offices early and do your research early, I don't mean early after you've started college. I mean when you're looking at colleges, so that you have the right ones on your list to begin with. And that means having a separate meeting with those staff. So don't rely on the admissions staff to help you with these questions. They're great, they're wonderful people, but they're not disability specialists. So if you start asking, oh, can I get this accommodation in college? And how many students do you have with this diagnosis? And they're just not going to know the answers. So make a separate appointment with disability services staff. It will have no impact on your child's admissions to college. And do that when you're searching during the research process. And I have a list of questions on our website. So if you're wondering like, oh, I don't know what to ask, I have a whole article on that.
Awesome. And we'll link to that in the show notes so that folks mm-hmm. can find that. Yeah, that's perfect. What can we do if as parents, we feel our child is not ready to go to college, but our child still wants to go to college?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's not a black or white situation. In fact, there are students who aren't college capable in the sense that if they have an intellectual disability and they wouldn't be able to handle the academic rigor of college, there are programs located at colleges that are non-degree certificate programs for students with disabilities, typically two-year programs, but some are shorter, some are longer. And those are opportunities where students can live on campus, have that experience, work on their independent living skills, get some career skills. So there's that route for students who are perhaps not capable of handling college courses. But for those who can handle the rigor, but still aren't ready to, you know, move away from home and be in school full time, they can do something in between. For example, community college. So typically, you know, with the kind of conventional notion of college, you graduate high school, you move away, you live at college, you study full time. Well, with community college, you're typically living at home. So that moving away from home and starting college don't happen at the same time. You're starting college without the independent living piece. So you've broken it up into two steps. And at community college, you can generally take, you know, just one or two courses. So start very slow. See how you do with one course. See how much support you need. You know, do you need a tutor? Do you need an academic coach? And then if you do well with that, kind of maybe take more courses the next term. And once you have an associate's, you know, you may be then ready to live away from home and transfer to a four-year college. So you can break it down into smaller steps, or you can take a gap year and at least buy yourself one more year to become college ready.
Within a gap year, what do you recommend students and families focus on?
So it really depends on the skills that they need to master during that time. You know, are they social? Are they executive function? Are they independent living skills? A gap year can be just about anything you can imagine. So a gap year, in theory, could be just sitting at home watching TV, but I certainly don't recommend that. Could be traveling around the world. It could be starting your own company. It could be working at a full-time job. Lots of different things you could do during a gap year. But there are also college readiness programs, gap year programs specifically designed for neurodivergent students, students with learning differences, to help them become college ready. And those can be a great option for our students. In fact, I recently did a live stream webinar on that very topic of postgraduate programs for students with learning differences. And you can find the recording on our website too, or on our YouTube channel. So during those programs, during that kind of gap year, a student could be working on academic skills, independent living skills, social skills, all the stuff at the same time.
Can IEP goals for later school years include goals to prep for life after high school?
Did you say can they?
Yes.
A
high school student, could they, within their IEP, have goals established to help prep them or prepare for that transition to life after high school?
Yeah, there absolutely should be post-secondary goals and a transition plan. Some of this is kind of required. How well or how much or how early districts are doing that can vary. And when I ask parents, you know, do you have a transition plan? What's in the IEP about a transition plan? Sometimes parents just sort of scratch their heads that not much has been done yet. So, you know, the folks who work in schools are great. They're dedicated. They're doing it because they want to help kids, but they may be very stretched. They're, you know, probably working with hundreds of kids. So parents and students need to step up as well and be self-advocating to make sure that the appropriate goals are in there. For example, can they take a dual enrollment course, a community college course, while they're still in high school to start to test the waters and see, are they ready for college?
If you had a magic wand and you could wave it over all of your kids' IEPs, what would that life skill or transition goal look like?
Gosh, that's a tough one.
It is a tough one because not every student is different.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of our kids need to work on multiple areas, social skills, executive function skills, independent living skills. But I think the one that it is common to most of our students is the executive functions, being able to manage their time and manage their assignments. So having something in place that either provides them with the support so that they can gradually transition to being more independent would be key. And executive function coaches don't just sort of spoon feed the child, but they teach the child skills and give the child tools to be more independent as they go along. So something in that area, I think, would be the one that I would want to concentrate on the most, because I see that with almost all of our students.
What can we do if our students need to take medication daily or eat a specific diet or access other services? How can we prepare them to do this when we're not around? Is there any low-hanging fruit we can share for parents?
Yeah, I mean, those are certainly all things that there's no reason why those issues should prevent someone from going to college. Kids need to be pretty independent in, say, taking their medication while they're in high school. So if the approach in high school is that the parent is kind of reminding or nagging them every day, did you take your medication yet? That's not going to work in college. You know, texting them or calling them every day is not really a good solution when they're in college. So coming up with a system to have that become independent in high school is critical. Whether that's an app on the student's phone or, you know, a post-it note on the mirror in the bathroom, whatever that strategy is, they need to develop that in high school so that the parent can be confident that this isn't going to fall apart when they're in college. Same thing for diet or anything else. And college dining halls are pretty accommodating these days of dietary needs. So you needn't worry that they can't get a special diet or allergen-free diet in college. I mean, you still want to do your research and your homework, but colleges are pretty good about accommodating dietary differences.
Any questions that we could ask our personal students during high school to help kind of guide them so that they can start to determine what they may be interested in or what their calling may be in terms of work and study that they want to focus on?
Yeah, this is an area that I love working on this with kids, sort of helping them discover their talents, their passions that they want to pursue as they go along in life. You know, keep in mind that in this day and age, people have multiple jobs, multiple careers. So it isn't necessarily just finding that one thing that you're going to do forever. But it's not just about asking questions. It's also about kind of observing your child or your student and seeing, like, what do they talk about at the dinner table? What do they keep bringing up? What videos on YouTube what types of videos do they gravitate towards? What do they do when they're kind of idle or on vacation or have free time? Do they like to do hands-on things where they're building things or making things or fixing things? Are they more of a sort of a people person where they just like to schmooze and socialize and interact with others? Or do they love animals? Do they spend a lot of time, you know, with the family pet or show a passion for animals? So if you can kind of isolate what they naturally gravitate towards, then that would open the door towards potential majors and careers. And yeah, of course, you can ask them questions too, like, you know, hey, what are you following in the news these days? Or, you know, what kind of music are you into now? Or, you know, what were you and your friends, you know, doing or talking about? And, you know, without being too intrusive, of course.
Right. Any real stories that you can share about someone you've worked with that relates to this, where you've helped a student discover what they've wanted to do or helped kind of get them started?
Well, some of it is just empowering them to continue pursuing what they love. So, you know, students I have who say that, you know, they've always loved working with kids, that they have been a camp counselor during the summer and, you know, really just gravitate towards kids, then I, you know, encourage them to that whatever it is that they love and have been successful at doing, they can keep doing that and find a career in that. I've had students, you know, go into animal related fields like veterinary science, teaching, you know, or worked with a student. I work with students with other disabilities too. I had a student last year who's a deaf college student who wanted to be a teacher and applied to master's programs in education, just clearly born to be a history teacher. And it was just a great journey helping him go through the application process. Sometimes students will have different interests, like more than one interest, and they don't see how they can connect. Like they love sports and they, you know, they're very social, but they don't have any, you know, obvious like academic interest. Well, sports management could be a great fit for them, where they get to be in the sports world, use their people skills, or if they're good with, if they're interested in sports, but they're good with, also good with numbers, sports analytics, data analytics related to sports. And I've had students who are good at tech and also love music. Well, sound engineering or audio engineering could be a great fit for them. So, you know, sometimes it's figuring out ways that two different interests that seem unrelated can actually work together in a specific career.
Yeah, that's huge. Just thinking outside of the box and helping mm-hmm. to guide students, because, you know, often students and even sometimes parents aren't familiar with some of the ways that you could connect those two interests for a yeah. career.
And I just want to say one thing on that note, that parents, you know, they're a generation older than their kids. So they may, as you said, they may not be as aware of all the opportunities today. And sometimes they have ideas that seem a little bit outdated, like, you know, oh, you're interested in music or art, but that's not really practical for a career. I think there's more opportunities now to make money as an artist than there probably ever been in human history with the internet and digital media. So there are lots of ways that students can make a career out of their passion that parents haven't always thought about.
Can we talk a little bit more about anxiety, either students' anxiety, whether it's in high school as they transition, or the increase in anxiety once a student arrives at college? How can we help support that student?
Sure. Well, as a clinical psychologist, this is an area that's near and dear to my heart, helping both the students and their parents with anxiety. In fact, that's, you know, part of the reason that we exist, Top College Consultants, is helping make this process less anxiety provoking, because it is a scary process. And anytime you're dealing with change and the unknown, anxiety is likely to go up. That's why the pandemic was so anxiety provoking for people, because it was unfamiliar. So with students, you know, a lot of it is empowering them, helping them believe that they can succeed, that it's okay to be different. If they have social challenges, if they have an unusual interest, that's okay. They can still pursue their passion. They don't have to be the most popular kid in school. Helping them understand that, you know, even if they're not an A student, if they're a B student or even a C student, there's still colleges out there that they can get into and thrive at. That there's colleges, you know, if they're more hands-on, there's colleges that have a more hands-on approach. And also reassuring the same for parents. Parents are panicking about so many different aspects of this process. Oh, my kid's not good at standardized testing. Well, most colleges now are test optional, so that's okay if they're not good at standardized tests. Oh, my kid doesn't have any extracurriculars, or they don't have any APs. You know, sure, if you're trying to get into the most selective colleges in the country, then AP courses may be one piece of getting in, but it's not necessary for all students. So helping them understand that there's a path for everybody, and that what other parents are talking about or what they read on the internet doesn't necessarily apply to their child.
We talked a little bit about ADA and the law and college and disability. Is a student required to disclose their disability to a college?
That's a great question. I just want to say one more thing about the ADA that we didn't really explicitly touch on, which is that the plan that the student might be on in high school, the IEP or the 504, that just disappears at the end of high school. Nothing carries over. There's no automatic carryover an IEP into college. So you're starting fresh, and that could be good or bad depending on the student's needs, but it doesn't carry any weight after you leave high school. You're creating a new plan, if any, in college. As far as disclosing, no, there's no requirement to disclose. And in fact, most students don't. And I don't mean that in a good way. Only about a quarter of students with learning differences disclose in college, which for the most part, I think is not a good thing, because if you're not disclosing, you can't get accommodations for something you haven't disclosed. So most kids with learning differences in colleges don't get any accommodations because they haven't disclosed. And then they're more likely to struggle. If you do disclose and you do pursue accommodations and services, then you have those resources at your disposal if you need them. If you don't need them and you have you know, more accommodations than you end up needing, that's fine. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't cost you anything. But if you don't have them and it turns out you do need them, you can't get them retroactively. You know, if you fail a test, you can't say, oh, well, I should have had extra time because I have a disability. It's too late at that point. If you have the extra time and you don't need it, that's fine. That doesn't hurt you. So there's no requirement to disclose, but it is frequently helpful to disclose. You definitely want to disclose once you've committed to the college. Once you've said, this is the college I'm going to, I've put down a deposit, then you should meet with the Disability Services Office before school starts, get those accommodations in place, figure out what services, if any, you need, so that that's all lined up. That's pretty straightforward. The other question is, do you disclose during the application process? That's a very different question. If there is something on the transcript that might otherwise be confusing to a college, like you changed high schools, your grades suddenly went up or suddenly went down, or there's no foreign languages on your high school transcript because you had a foreign language waiver. If there's something that's kind of unusual, then you probably do want to explain that to colleges so that they're not, you know, using their imagination and filling in the gaps. Then I also have students who are passionate about their neurodiversity and they want to disclose that because it's a key part of their identity. They see this is a core to who I am. And if you don't understand this, you don't know me. So I'm going to write about it in my essay. Lots of my students do. They do absolutely fine. There's no reason to think a college is going to discriminate against you. There's no reason to think that disclosure would help you or hurt you in your application. So it's a personal decision. It's entirely up to the student. And we help guide them through that decision process.
Well, you've mentioned ensuring that documents are in order prior to transitioning to post-secondary. And you also just mentioned in terms of IDEA, and a lot of parents, again, don't necessarily know that. What do you recommend for parents to ensure that they have the needed paperwork for their student when they're going to college? So the student discloses, what type of paperwork would they need to bring with them to the Disability Service Office to get the support that they're looking for?
So the most surefire way to ensure that is to communicate with the Disability Services Office at the college and find out what they need. That may seem kind of obvious now that I've said it, but it's important to say. And the Disability Services Office sometimes has a different name. It might be called the Office of Accessibility, it might be called the Office of Student Success or something else. But you know, if you Google disability and the name of the college, you can usually find it pretty quickly. It might be right there on the website. Here's what we need for documentation. There might be forms to fill out. If not, you can email them or call them and find out, hey, I'm going to be starting college next year. What do I need in order to get accommodations for ADHD or autism, dyslexia, what have you. The gold standard, if you have a neuropsychological evaluation that was done within 3 years of starting college, I don't know of any college that wouldn't honor that. So if you have a recent neuropsychological evaluation within 3 years, you should be good to go at just about any college that I can think of. If you don't have that, I'm not saying you should panic or rush out and have that done. I did talk to a college recently that said, we're really flexible. We'll basically take whatever the student has. If they have an older neuropsych, if they have just an IEP from high school, we'll take whatever you bring us and we'll work with that. So that's sort of at the extreme end of flexibility. That's great. But some colleges are very rigid and they'll say it has to be a neuropsych evaluation within the last 3 years, which is why you need to check with your specific college to find out.
So for me, supporting families of school-aged children, we talk about a parent input statement, and I know we're talking about older kids and we want them to be able to speak on their behalf and not have mom go to the college professor. But what I encourage parents to do is to kind of reach out to the parent, to the teachers in the new school year, and kind of, this is what my child is, and this is what they look like, and this is what they need. This is a little bit about them, because we know that teachers do receive or should receive at least an IEP at a glance, but it's just nice to have that contact with the teacher to really explain your baby. So now these are young adults. How do you encourage your families, your students to advocate? Specifically, is it appropriate for them to talk to the professor? If so, what does that look like?
In a word, no, it's not appropriate for them to talk to the professor. Okay. That has to be done by the student would be.
Not, I meant the student. Yeah. I did not mean the parent. I knew at that point it needs to be the student. Yes.
And there might be situations where there's another adult or another professional at the college helping them advocate. So for example, if a student had an accommodation that they were entitled to at college, if that was they had a written letter from the disability services office and they go to the professor, and typically, not always, but typically students have to go to each professor in every term and say, here's my accommodations, you know, just want to let you know, this is what I'm supposed to be getting. If they encountered a professor who pushed back and said, oh, I'm not going to do that, I don't do that in my class, then it would be appropriate for them to go back to the disability services office and say, help, you know, I'm having difficulty with this professor, help me, you know, sort this out. And disability services will step in and help mediate and work that out typically. That doesn't happen very often. So families shouldn't worry that that's going to, you know, be a common occurrence. So there might be occasions where other staff would step in, but it shouldn't be the parents. And that's why it's important in high school to be making that shift for students to be stepping into the front line and self-advocating with their teachers. You know, if they're not happy with a grade, or if they don't understand something, or if there's something they need to work out, they should be talking with their teachers, not going home to their parents and saying, hey, can you call up my teacher and, you know, deal with X, Y, or Z.
I think kids, even at a younger age than we even give them credit for, can start to advocate for themselves with the appropriate support and guidance, whether it's sending an email, whether it's walking up to the teacher and just saying, you know, this is what I need, or have the questions or so forth.
And a student might be anxious about that. A student, you know, if the parent said, oh, you're worried about this, or you disagree with your teacher, well, go back and talk to them. And the, you know, the student might push back and say, oh, I'm worried, you know, I don't want to, can you do it for me? You know, it's not always coming from the parents being overprotective. It might be the student trying to pull the parent in, and the parent can push back in that situation and say, you know, I believe in you, you can do this. Let's role play how you're going to talk to your teacher tomorrow about this. Let's walk through how you're going to do that. So, you know, not just sort of take no for an answer, but work with your child to get ready to have that conversation.
Right. And then transferring that decision making to the student versus the adult. Not every student is accepted, whether they have a disability or not. So how do we keep a positive mindset when an acceptance doesn't happen?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's so important to have a good, well thought out, balanced college list, which is a big part of what we do when we work with our students. So there should never be a situation where a student doesn't get in anywhere. I've certainly never had that situation where a student didn't have any acceptances. In fact, I've had a number of students who got into all the colleges that they applied to because it was a very carefully crafted list. So that should never happen. If it did happen, I actually have an article on that topic called Help, I Didn't Get Into College, Now What? So folks can read that blog post. There are colleges with rolling admissions so that even if it's now the spring, you know, March, April, and you didn't get into any of the colleges, you know, worst case scenario, there's still colleges with rolling admissions that are accepting applications. But assuming that you're talking about students who's not getting into some of their colleges and they're devastated because they didn't get into the one they really wanted to, or they're just not used to rejection, that is just an important life lesson. They need to build resilience, that not everything in life is going to work out, that not every job you apply to is going to work out. If you, you know, ask somebody out on a date, they're not necessarily going to say yes, that not everything, you know, try to get into a major in college or a class, you might not get into that. That is just a life lesson that you know, they need to be okay with failure, if you want to call it that. It's a learning experience. What did we learn from this? What are your options given that this didn't work out? We try to prepare students for that, you know, knowing that if you are applying, if some of your schools are what students like to call reach, or what I call unlikely, just statistically unlikely. We know that most students applying to this college don't get in. So chances are you won't get in either. We know that going in, so that shouldn't, when it happens, we want to kind of look at that as like, yeah, we kind of thought that was going to happen. That was the most likely outcome, that you wouldn't get in, just like most students who don't get in there. And it's not a personal reflection. So colleges, first of all, they may be getting many thousands of applications. They may only be spending a few minutes we don't even know for sure that they read your essay or letters of recommendation. They should, but they might have been in a rush and maybe they just ruled you out right off the bat because of a GPA or something. Hopefully not. That could happen. But even then, they are building a college class. They're looking at their institutional needs. We need some students with full pay who aren't applying for financial need. We want some racial diversity. We want some geographic diversity. So you come along and maybe you don't fit what they're looking for at that particular moment. It's no reflection on your shortcomings. It's just not a fit for what the college is looking for at that particular year.
Kind of as we're winding down, we've covered a lot of ground here, but what did I not ask or not know enough to ask that I should have asked?
About me or about college?
Either one. I'm trying to think of that college transition.
A college transition. Yeah. I mean, personally, I didn't talk about all the things I bring to the table. I'm also a writer and editor, so I love working with kids on their essays. It's my favorite part of the work. And we didn't really talk about essays very much. It can be a big part of the process of applying to college. It's frequently the most time-consuming part of what we do. So the college list, that's time-consuming too. And students, we didn't really talk about exploring colleges either, the process of getting out there and seeing the colleges. And I provide guidance to families on, well, what should you do when you're on a college tour? What should you be asking? What should you be looking for? It's really important for students to figure out what they're looking for in a college, because sometimes, it's not unusual at all for students to say, I don't know. I don't know if I want a big college or a small college, an urban college or a suburban college, a public or a private university. What do I know? I'm just a high school student. That's why you have to get out there and see different colleges so that you can start to develop preferences and attitudes and reactions and say, you know what? I loved the way this one was laid out. I loved the residence hall. I loved the athletic facilities. I loved the clubs that they offer. I want to find more colleges like that. That's super helpful for us so that we can say, oh, great, you like this college? Well, I know, five more that are quite similar to that. Or conversely, if they don't like it, if they say, oh, that one was just it was too isolated, too far from the city. I need to be closer to a city. Or, it was too big and overwhelming. I want something a little more cozy and intimate. Great. Then we can look for colleges that are more along the lines of what you need. And I mentioned the essay process. A lot of our students are really challenged with writing. And even students who are good writers haven't applied to college before. So this is a unique process for them, where they're having to write things that are very different from what they write in high school. Again, we help with the anxiety about the uncertainty of that this is a new area for that. And students may have to do multiple drafts. That's totally fine. If their first draft is way off base or really, nowhere near being ready for prime time, we help them get it ready, not by writing anything for them or by using AI to get it written for them, but just giving them, lots of feedback for what they did right and what they should do more of and so on.
Where should a parent start then? Because it seems very overwhelming, right? If you have the essays and then kind of the initial college visits, trying to figure out if you went large or small or city or rural, where should a parent first start in terms of helping guide their student to starting?
So a great way to start is to just visit a few nearby colleges that are different from each other. Because even if your student is sure that they want to go to a different part of the country because of the climate or political climate or what have you, it's just not very practical to do a lot of college visits far away except during one short period like the spring break. So get out. There's often weekend tours available, Saturdays, sometimes even Sundays. And tour, sign up, don't drive around on your own. Sign up on the website for tours and go to a few local colleges. Hopefully you have some within driving distance so that you can both understand, you'll start learning about the admissions process from the admissions officers. You'll learn about what should I be looking for? Oh, I didn't even think to look at these aspects of the dining hall. But then after I went into this dining hall and saw how noisy or smelly it was, I realized, I have certain needs that I need to be thinking about. So once you get out and see a few colleges, things will start to click for you. And then once you've built your college list, then you'll kind of know what you're in for, what essays do you have to write? So the list comes first. We don't really get into talking about things like essays and so on. Another thing that the students can start doing early on is figure out who do you want to write recommendations for you? Which teachers know you well and would be in a good position to write recommendations?
If you had a billboard with one tip for parents, what would it be and why?
Yeah, I mean, there's two that come to mind, to be honest. One is start early, which we've talked about. But the other, which maybe I haven't emphasized enough, is to kind of relax. It's going to be okay. Even if your kid doesn't go to college, even if your kid doesn't want to go to college or isn't able to complete college, there's loads of careers they can do that don't require a college degree. And even if your kid doesn't have the grades to get into what you believe to be the best colleges, there's loads of colleges that are dying for more students that are trying to fill seats. So there's a college out there for everyone. There's a major out there for everyone. There's a career path out there for everyone. Your kid will be okay. It may take longer, and that's okay too. If it takes a gap year, if your kid doesn't go to college for 5 years and, you know, wants to work first, that's fine too. There's lots of different pathways to having a successful adult life.
Absolutely. And regardless of what that path looks like, you can always prepare for what you said, that college readiness, that awareness, advocacy, and self-management.
Yep.
Absolutely. Where can people find you and your services?
So we are Top College Consultants. So the website is topcollegeconsultants.com. Also have a Facebook page and a YouTube channel, but I would start with the website. There's tons of free resources. Even if you have no intention of hiring a consultant, we have a neurodiversity-friendly college list, lots of recorded webinars, articles, podcasts. So lots of free resources that anyone can access. You don't have to give us your email address in order to see all of those resources.
Fantastic. Fantastic. This is such a pleasure. And I hope folks listen to this and kind of get some thoughts in their head for their families and for their students so that they can be better prepared for the next portion of their life and their journey. So thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Wendy. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks again for listening to today's conversation, talking about college readiness. My strategy takeaways are start early. Know your kid. Know the difference between college readiness and college capable as it relates to your specific child, so that you can make sure that you are planning, you have the documents, that you are addressing disability services, and also that you are aware of ADA, meaning access, where IDEA equals success. There's a difference in the law, so hopefully you guys will search that out. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials. Looking for some tips? Head on over to learningessentialsedu.com. You can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting, plus bonus questions to ask. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. Last but not least, you know your kid if they are struggling or thriving, if they are happy or losing hope, if they understand or they are completely lost. The question is, what now? If you're unsure what steps to take to help your child succeed and need a starting point, take my free quiz, learningessentialsedu.com. Hope this helps make it a great day. Bye for now.